Technorama episode 646. Brace yourselves. We're back. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. If you're a returning guest, welcome back. We appreciate you coming back. Oh, there's so many comments I could throw in there, but I'm going to leave them for another time because I think we used them all up anyway. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And just across that virtual table from me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. And no, I'm not updating the show notes as I'm getting ready to record.
No, that pink cursor is just jumping all over the place. You actually found the question of the week last week?
I forgot to put it in from last time.
I didn't socialize it because I didn't know what it was. So do we have any answers?
That's a good question because to be honest with you,
we shouldn't even put it up there if we forgot to socialize it because we didn't.
Well, you know what?
Answers.
Put it out there. If somebody wants to respond, fine.
One at the end of the show.
And that's fine.
Okay. If there's anybody in chat who wants to respond to the
podcasting, it's not always in real time. So if they want to reply to, you know, later,
it's podcasting. It doesn't have to be perfect.
That's right.
Our question of the week.
By the way.
Yeah.
Huh? Well, go ahead.
Our question of the week 4 weeks ago, if you're interested, was what movie can be completely spoiled by a very small piece of information? I am your father. Okay. No using that one. So give us what, if you're in the chat and you want to do this live, otherwise you could do it. If you're watching this later, you could put it in the comments. That would work too. And we'll have another one at the end of the show. What were you about to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, does this show count for one of our Dog Days podcasts?
No, because it's not showing up on the master feed.
No, but by the way, if you're listening to this, you're probably a few days behind it, but the Dog Days of Podcasting started on August 1st. So if you want to go listen to all the other podcasters, try and keep up with a 30-day schedule 31, for the month of August.
31. There's 31 days 31. In August.
Yeah. So go over there, check it out. There's a link to the master feed and I'll be posting all the people and their individual links here soon, but yeah, go check it out. I'll be posting mine later tonight after this show.
And where can they find that? Give them
at the dog or dogdaysofpodcasting.com. There's no the.
I got a beef about subscribing on a mobile device, though. It's not easy. For whatever reason, I typed in the URL, and it was not accepting it. And I went to the website with my iPad, because that's where I have Overcast, and said, hey, do you want to use iTunes? Do you want to use Pocket Cast, or do you want the RSS feed? If you press the RSS feed, it says, great, but it doesn't like copy the URL. We need like a copy URL for the universal podcast. It made it very challenging to put that onto my iPad, to say the least.
Huh. But because I remember cut and pasting it into Pocket Cast. That's what I use. So
yeah,
I mean, I didn't do it this year. I mean, I've been subscribed to it for 12 years or however long we've been doing this.
Yeah, you don't think about the new people trying to subscribe until you
see how long have we been doing this? So
since 2012. This is the 10th year.
10th year. Well, yeah, that's right. How about that?
Don't challenge my math skills.
That's 8. No, 9.
That's 10. 2012, 13, 14, uh-huh. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. This is the 10th year.
Oh, 21.
Year. Oh, wow.
Maybe I should have.
Don't challenge my math skills.
I should have promoted that a little more. We've been doing this for 10 years.
This is the 10th year. Yes. It's like this is the 21st century.
Yeah. I don't believe it. Do you start counting at the beginning or after the first year?
The first century was the 0th century. Can we get on with the show?
It would be one.
Enough of the friendly banter. You're losing badly. Hey, give up.
Before, it'd be half a century.
This
so
is like
it's
discussing
not
with my wife. The words, sorry, I was wrong, never come out of her mouth.
No, it should be coming out of your mouth. That's
yeah,
how marriage
even when
works.
She's blatantly wrong. Okay.
Anyway, doesn't matter.
Let's get, this is not marital counseling. Let's do the history thing.
Yeah, sit down, Chuck. Lay down.
And that's letter. That's letters music. Let's do this. Sorry, I was wrong. On this day in history, for August 4th, 2021, this is the 216th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are only 149 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1693 that date traditionally ascribed to Dom Perignon's invention of champagne. Although it's not clear whether he actually invented champagne. However, he's been credited as the innovator who developed the techniques used to perfect sparkling wine.
And on August 4th, 1821, the Saturday Evening Post was published for the first time as a weekly newspaper.
And Norman Rockwell was hired soon after that.
Yeah, that's right. It came along after that.
It was on that same date in 1892 that the father and stepmother of Lizzie Borden were found murdered in their Fall River, Massachusetts home. Mm. She was tried and acquitted for the crimes a year later.
And it was also 14 years ago today that NASA's Phoenix spacecraft was launched, rose from the ashes, and
Wasn't launched from Phoenix. I don't know where they came up with the name.
Yeah, New Mexico.
Happy birthday goes out in this date to Irish physicist, astronomer, and mathematician William Rowan Hamilton, born on this date in 1805.
And Louis Vuitton.
Do you know your fashion designers, how to say them?
I don't know his last name.
Louis Vuitton.
Vuitton. The French, I'm just messing around. The French fashion designer founded Louis Vuitton was born 200 years ago today.
It's like, yeah, Earl Craftsman started the Craftsman Tools, or something like that. John Venn, the English mathematician. Is he the guy who invented the circle diagram? The Venn diagram?
Yes, that's right.
I'm going to go with that. Well, he was born today in 1834.
And I lost my place.
American trumpet
player. There it is. American trumpet player and singer Louis Armstrong was born 120 years ago today.
And not only that about Louis Armstrong, I sang Hello Dolly last night on Saturday Night Karaoke.
Yeah.
And it was also 1964, because we're going through the years on Saturday Night Karaoke, 1964, when the musical Hello Dolly came out with Barbara Streisand.
Oh, yeah.
Hello Dolly, this is Louis Dolly.
Okay, that doesn't work with this music. Now you know why my voice sounds the way it does tonight.
Yeah.
Born August 4th, 1915, American businessman founded Avis Rent-A-Car. Yes, it's Warren Rent-A-Car.
Yeah.
No, it's Warren Avis.
You mean Avis like the rental? Yeah, I was thinking of the Orville. They made that joke on there. Avis like the rental car? Francis E. Allen, the American computer scientist and academic, was born 89 years ago today.
American actor Don S. Davis. If you watch Stargate Atlantis, you know who this... actually, Stargate SG-1, you know who this is. He was born today in 1942.
And also turning 66 today is American actor, director, and screenwriter Billy Bob Thornton.
The Billy Bob Thornton?
Mm-hmm. You got that right.
Mm-hmm. Also born on that same day in 1961, American lawyer and politician, and the 44th president of the United States, Nobel Prize laureate. He won the Nobel Prize? Barack Obama.
Yes, he did. They gave it to him before he did anything. That's kind of...
Nice.
That was kind of amazing.
Hey, big birthday, Uncle Barack.
And also turning 53 today is South Korean-American actor Daniel Dae Kim. Excuse me.
Hawaii Five-0.
That's right.
Donna's watching that all the time. American actress and humanitarian and member of the British royal family, Meghan Markle, is 40. She's having kids at this age.
Well, is she a member anymore?
Yes, they are still a member of the royal family. They just don't.
Okay.
They had to turn in their titles.
They abstained.
So don't get. Yeah, you can't ever sell your car without a title.
That's right.
Listener birthdays this week include Clark and Diana, who are the awesome people and kids of Gary from Jacksonville.
Wait, Gary, they got the same birthday?
Must be twins, or they were coincidentally just happened to be a year or three apart.
Yeah.
August 6th is my eldest daughter, Julie. Philippa Ballantyne on the 8th. Matt Coe on the 9th. Also on 9th is Julia Pose from the Technorama promo. She's famous.
She's 36 now.
Pretty much. I did reach out to Tom recently. She's doing well. Sam Martin on the 10th. So happy birthday to all of you. If you want to get your names read out on this infamous show. There's a birthday calendar link at the bottom of the screen if you're watching live, chuckchat.com/birthday. Go to that, chuckchat.com/birthday. Fill out the form! And when it comes time to read your birthday, or apparently your children, or, yeah, wives, who knows what's on there, vehicles, we will read them out at the appropriate time of year in celebration of that. So we're going to march the band on out of here. Because that's the way it was on this day in history for August 4th, 2021. I mean, there's only 37 seconds left. But
by the way, before we move on, I got a question for Gary. He's in the chat room.
Is he?
Of course, he responded to both of his kids being on the same birthday as saying,
Two years apart.
He said, we run a tight ship here.
Makes it easier. You don't have to.
Hey, I want to know, is that worse having you and your sibling having the same birthday? Is that kind of like having your birthday too close to Christmas or? You know, where
it might be when you're very young and you want that individualism, but I can see as you're older, shared birthdays are a cool thing. I've always made a big deal about sharing my birthday with my nephew Travis. So it's
but he's not in the same household as you were. So I mean, yeah, that would kind of put a damper on it. If hey, happy birthday, Joe. Oh, and you, Chuck.
Oh, did I forget anyone? Happy birthday, Craig, and what's your name?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, we're not.
Oh, I'm sorry. He ate all the birthday pancakes. You should have got up earlier.
Many joint parties. You know that's legal in most states now. That's what Gary said. Many joint parties.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, great birthday party, man. Okay.
Oh, wait, you want me to do my bong impression?
No.
Good news, everyone.
Well, first the good news. The Russian-built Naka laboratory successfully docked with the International Space Station on Thursday morning. Wait, what Thursday morning? When was this written? Oh, it was written this past week. Okay, so
yeah, and then the hijinks ensued.
Now, the not-so-good news, everyone. Naka, quote, inadvertently and unexpectedly, unquote, fired its thrusters after docking, causing the ISS to lose attitude control. You watch your attitude, mister. AKA, you know, the control over its orientation. On Friday, Russian space agency Roscosmos pointed to a short-term software failure as the culprit. The Roscosmos statement attributed the ISS Russian segment flight director Vladimir Solovyov. Okay, now I can do it. I'm fine. How are you?
You have such a hard time with names, I swear.
Solovyov. I just have to read them once.
Right.
Said the docking mechanics worked reliably, but a direct command was mistakenly implemented to turn on the module's engine for withdrawal, which led to some modification of the orientation of the complex as a whole. According to NASA TV updates, the station went out of orientation by about 45 degrees. This is not slight, you know, it's not like the things you hear on Star Trek where it's, you know, 0.003 degrees variance. Okay, thrusters built into a service module and the Russian Progress spacecraft docked to the station were able to correct the problem and bring the ISS back under control. Yeah, so you've got this module coming up to the ISS and, you know, clunk, whoa! Suddenly we're...
You
know,
can you imagine being in there going, you hear something? Something is not right. You hear it?
Not something's not right. It's like, why are we
and you
now...
you see the Earth kind of...
Yeah, really. You know, it's like, why... this window doesn't normally look at the Earth.
why is space over there now? Yeah. I was blown away when I read that. I was like, a software update. You know, the module literally just docked. And all of a sudden, I was wondering, my first thought was, I wonder if that was on purpose, you know, to try and...
It was the line of code that was expecting an empty string, but really got a null.
Or it was one of those typos where it should have been like a period instead of a comma.
That would have been a syntax error, but they weren't looking for the right parameters at the right...
Right.
Oh, I forgot to put the true false in there.
Wait, what's going on?
And then that everybody scratches their head and go, how has this been working?
Right.
It's like, this shouldn't have worked in the first place. How did we not catch this earlier?
I'm trying to remember what the other there was another issue, software issue, not just the thrusters. There was something else that happened too. But I, you know, also I was thinking, what kind of pressure is that put on that docking clamp that does it would not normally expect? You know, because I mean, I don't think do they design it for units to attach to it and then turn on its thrusters? I figure that's a lot of pressure, right?
I don't think the thrusters were supposed to turn on it. It feels like a
That's what I'm getting at. So the docking clamp, wouldn't that put a lot of stress on it? I don't know.
I'm sure something had stress somewhere, but I don't know the mechanics of where the module docks and how. I'd need a visual to be able to see it better. Anyway, let's go on to the next story. Since we have no clue about the last one.
Yeah. As you can tell, we're engineers here. So Google has invented time crystals.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they could be the greatest scientific achievement of our lifetimes. So, Eureka! That's what it says in the article. A research team featuring dozens of scientists working in a partnership with Google's quantum computing labs may have created the world's first time crystals inside a quantum computer. This is the kind of news that makes me want to jump up and down and do a happy dance. Again, quoting the article. So the scientists may have produced, the scientists may have produced a newly entirely phase of matter. I'm going to do my best to explain what this means and why I personally believe this is the most important scientific breakthrough of our lifetimes. For the sake of clarity, here are the 2 points. Time crystals are a wickedly difficult concept to understand and even harder to explain. That's not a point.
Stay in your seats, everyone. This could get deep.
The Google team might have created time crystals. This is preprint research and has not yet achieved full peer review. Until the rest of the scientific community has time to review and replicate the work, I can't say for sure this is legitimate.
That's the scientific method at work right there.
Yeah. So getting that out of the way. What's a time crystal? In colloquial terms, it's a big screw you to Isaac Newton. Hey, wait a minute. I'm related to Isaac Newton. I resent that.
I would have never guessed. Apparently, it skips a generation.
or 30 or whatever. Anyway, so time crystals are a new phase of matter. For the sake of simplicity, let's imagine an ice cube, a cube of ice. When you put the cube of ice in a glass of water, you're introducing two separate entities, the ice cube and the liquid water, to each other at two different temperatures. Everyone knows that the water will get colder, and over time, the ice will get warmer and turn into water. Eventually, you'll have a glass full of room temperature water.
Eureka! We've discovered ice water.
Yeah, actually, the process is called thermal equilibrium. Most people are familiar with Newton's law of motion. It is the one that says an object at rest tends to stay at rest, and an object in motion tends to stay with me.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard to get out of bed in the morning. An object at rest tends to stay at rest.
I'm at rest. I can't move. So anyway, an important side effect of this law of physics is it means its perpetual motion machine is classically impossible.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So according to the classical physics, the universe is always moving towards entropy. In other words, if we isolate an ice cube and room temperature water, a glass of water from all other external sources, the water will always melt the ice cube. The entropy of any system will also remain the same if there's no processes, and it will also always increase if there are processes. Since our universe has stars exploding, black holes sucking, and people also sucking, lighting things on fire, we have a chemical process. Entropy is always increasing, except when it comes to time crystals. Time crystals don't give a dang about Newton or anyone else thinks. They're lawbreakers and the heart takers. This guy really going for their alliteration here, isn't he? They can theoretically maintain entropy when they're used in a process.
I thought he was going for his inner Pat Benatar, but keep going.
So I'm trying to figure out where I can skip ahead a little bit. Because anyway, so literally everyone should care, as this guy says he wrote back in 2018, time crystals could be the miracle quantum computing needs. Nearly every far future tech humans can imagine, from teleportation to warp drives, from artificial food synthesizers and perpetual motion reactors capable of powering the world without burning fuels or harnessing energy, will require quantum computing systems. Quantum computers can solve really hard problems. I got some I can throw at it. Unfortunately, they're brittle. It's hard to build them. It's hard to maintain them. Hard to get them to do anything, and even harder to interpret the results they give. This is because of something called decoherence, which works like a lot like entropy. I'm gonna skip ahead because there's a little bit more here. So why is this exciting? Time crystals have always been theoretical, and by answer, always, I mean since 2012. If Google actually created time crystals, they could accelerate the timeline for quantum computing breakthroughs. At the far-fetched, super optimistic end of things, we could see the creation of a working warp drive in our lifetimes. Imagine taking a trip to Mars on the edge of our solar system and back to Earth in time to catch the evening news, maybe dinner.
But if you're going that fast, the evening news didn't happen yet, or 100 years have passed.
Yeah.
You come back and oops, your whole family's gone.
Yeah. So I'm still a little confused, and maybe I put the wrong article on here because I saw this in a couple of places, but when I saw about Google's time crystals, I was like, okay, what does that mean?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm a little confused by it still.
It sounds like it's still, they think they may have, but until the scientific community vets this all out and confirms what they've done, because that's the way science runs. It's like, hey, I think I have discovered something. And then you write a paper on it and your peers evaluate it and try and reproduce it. And if it's reproducible, then it becomes a theory and you go, okay, mm-hmm. We got something here.
Well, I think I see here, just looking at a quick description, it says in condensed matter physics, a time crystal refers to a system or subsystem whose lowest energy states evolve periodically. The name was proposed theoretically by Frank Wilczek in 2012 as a temporal analog to common crystals, which are periodic spatially.
All right, keep your eyes out for that, people. We're going to keep our eyes out too if we see any more news stories about it. Or
I have a feeling. So for quantum computing, I guess it's just all the different states that matter can be in. You can read it instead of just being on and off like a normal computer.
Yep. Yes. Quantum mechanics and quantum computing.
Okay. I wrapped it up into one of those little wrappers, like you get the caramel candies, Halloween, you pull it and.
Yeah. And.
That's my definition of a time crystal. It's all writ. Never mind.
Okay. All you got to do is find the very old Klingon guy in the cave.
Where's my PhD? Time crystal.
Didn't you watch Star Trek Discovery? We know where time crystals come from.
Yeah, I had to go talk to a Klingon to get some time crystals.
You got to go to the old Klingon guy in the cave.
He wasn't that old. He was using time crystals. He wasn't that old.
Well, you don't know how old he was because he was using time crystals. Let's go on with the hacks and strange stories, shall we? We found an interesting story, and by we, I mean Craig.
Yeah, that's right.
A new robot.
The editorial team.
The whole editorial team. A new robot known as the Dominator has set a Guinness World Record for placing 100,000 dominoes in just over 24 hours. Created by YouTuber and former NASA engineer Mark Rober, the Dominator is the result of more than 5 years of work. Rober had help from two freshmen from Stanford University and a Bay Area software engineer in creating the googly-eyed robot. That's not googly-eyed as in Google. It's anyway. The group programmed more than 14,000 lines of code and outfitted it with components like omnidirectional wheels and 3D printed funnels to create what Rober says is a friendly robot that is super good at only one thing: setting up a butt ton of dominoes really fast. That was a quote. Oh, he does have the googly eyes.
Yeah, he's got some on there.
Okay. You know, I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity for a machine like this as well. Just, what was I setting up the other day? And I said, you know, I should really have a machine that does this. Up against
your,
go ahead.
Were you arranging the pebbles in your yard? You could use one to do that.
Something like that. Maybe it was hauling a cactus. Who knows? Up against professional domino artist Lily Havish, the Dominator used its ability to lay down 300 tiles all at once to work about 10 times faster than a human. It took the robot about 2 hours to put down over 9,000 dominoes. While the Dominator is the face of the project, a lot of its efficiency comes from a separate sorting mechanism that consists of a KUKA robotic arm and almost 3 miles of Hot Wheel tracks. Hey, remember I talked to those kids at years ago on Technorama about the KUKA robotic arms?
That's right. At the
is that the
robotics
the,
competition?
No, was it wasn't at the robotics competition. It was at like a science fair at the Fox Valley Technical College.
Right.
They were just getting them anyway.
Years ago, they're all got families and stuff now.
Probably if they were just starting out their technical careers in 2007, you know, that's like 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably have kids of their own.
Is it 14? Are you right?
A series of conveyor belts ferry the dominoes, the Dominions by color. I think somebody had a typo here. And, no,
yeah, they've gotten into Deep Space Nine.
I guess so. The Dominion's taking over your competition. They sort them by color before the KUKA arm deposits them in the appropriate chute. When the Dominator visits the station for a refill, the lower platform slides away, instantly loads its 3D printed funnels with all the dominoes it needs to lay down 300 at once. Okay, so this isn't going pit on the floor. It's going ka-chunk. Go get some more. Ka-chunk. Okay, that's pretty cool. And this way, downtime is kept to a minimum. To put its final achievement in context, it would take a team of 7 skilled domino builders about a full week to make up the Super Mario Brothers-like mural that the Dominator did in little more than a day to complete. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And it doesn't accidentally knock them down either and go, oh no!
Yeah, I know. Actually, I haven't watched the whole video, but I was sort of watching the beginning of it. And they were showing somebody lining them up and accidentally knocking them down as they were standing them up. And you know, the robot comes in and starts doing its thing.
A day to fix that up. I mean, it's
a day for 100,000 dominoes. That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty fast, but you think about it and it would be like watching that thing get 3D printed, though, because he's got to go over, get a tray, set it down, go over, get a tray, set it down.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if you remember, and Mark Rober was also the guy that did the squirrel maze.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He's done that. And that glitter bomb, you know, for the porch pyres. So, yeah.
All right. Should we do a shout out to the chat room?
Let's do a shout out. I like that better.
A chow down.
Yeah.
Chow down in the chat room. I've got John Miller Jr. and Gary on Facebook. Don't know if you see anybody more in that. And we got Dan D Man is on YouTube. Hello, Dan D Man.
Hey.
We had a couple other people in and out of YouTube, but I don't see them around anymore because they didn't make any comments. But if you are watching us, we do this show on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you around. Jump in the chat, be part of the fun. And if you're not, well, you can always watch us on Facebook and YouTube later because, hey, it's a live stream and there it is. There you have it. Let's, what's next? Remember when? We've got to remember when.
That's right.
It's been so long since I had to remember anything.
Well, that's the whole reason we named it that.
Okay.
It's been so long.
What have you found?
So this is the oldest animal life on Earth. It was discovered in Canada. Of all places. I'm just kidding. 890 million years old. So life as we know it had taken a pretty funky turn around 541 million years ago. That's when a period called the Cambrian emerged. And with it, the so-called Cambrian explosion ushered in practically all major groups of animals. It lasted for about 25 million years. And resulted in the divergence of life as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Cambrian explosion, life on Earth was simple and small. It was composed of either individual cells or microscopic multicellular organisms, or at least as so we thought. Scientists have found some evidence of animal life existing before the Cambrian, in particular, some sponges, not SpongeBob, but seem to have merged before the Cambrian. But how long before? So according to a recent study, the first sponges emerged a whopping 350 million years before the Cambrian, or 890 million years ago today. Quote, if I'm right, animals emerged long, long before the first appearance of the traditional animal fossils, study author Elizabeth Turner told Nature. That would mean there's a deep back history of animals and not just that just didn't get well preserved or preserved very well. The fossils discovered by Turner from a remote area in northwestern Canada, were accessible only by helicopter, resembled some modern sponges known as the Keratos demo sponges.
These are just the demo sponges. They weren't the ones that went out in production. They looked beta. Better than they actually worked.
That's right. The researchers dated the layer of rocks in which the sponge fossils were found, a solid analysis tool that leaves little room for question regarding the fossil's age. Don't question it. Just leaves little room for questioning. The identification of sponges have also seemed pretty clear. Quote, the organic skeleton is very characteristic of sponge fossils, explaining geobiologist Jacob Rittner, who reviewed Turner's study ahead of the publication. They are not known comparable structures. There are not any.
Interesting. So they found some very old sponges, and you know, I would have thought that far back, all we had was bacteria and you know, that kind of thing. But this was before the Cambrian explosion.
He said 390 years
before the Cambrian explosion, life on Earth was simple and small, or so we thought. Wow. Okay. So we had sponges. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, so 390 million years before the Cambrian Age, which makes it about 890 million years ago. Don't question my math.
Science is always. I don't question. I know it sucks.
Hey, wait.
The science is always learning and challenge the assumptions every day. What maybe quote unquote fact today can be overturned by. What maybe
fiction tomorrow.
Significant. Yeah, there's some interesting discoveries still to be had out there.
That's right.
All right, let's go to our patrons. We like to thank the people that make this show possible. And remember, you only pay for what you get, because we just took 3-4 weeks off, something like that.
Well, if you're paying for what you get, I'm sorry.
you get what you pay for. No,
yeah.
Something like that. But our patrons didn't have anything to do with that, so we're back, and for as little as a dollar a show, you can help support this show. We just had our Wirecast renewal come up on the 31st of July, so just a few days ago as we record this, actually yesterday as we record this, and that was taken care of entirely by you people. Thank you very much. Because Wirecast is the software we use to broadcast this and some of our other episodes. Thank you very much for that support. It goes that thanks is genuine, and it goes to Alexis Duran and Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman. Thank you, Ben Vaughn and Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, who was hanging out just up there. He said, chow down on the chat room. Yum, yum. Well, that was when our... chat room chow down was there. Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, also in the chat tonight. Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Yorga Schrawen, Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshy, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Thank you, everybody, for supporting this show. Very much appreciated. Because it helps put money in the bank. Our hosting comes due the first of every month, and you've got it covered. So bandwidth, hosting, software upgrades, it's all due to you and your love and your caring.
The whole IT life cycle is right there.
if you want to be part of this family fun and be part of the family, get your name on every episode and a special Patreon show that we record right after this comes out on Mondays. All you got to do is check out that link that's on the bottom of the screen there, or go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast if you're listening to this in audio form. Obviously, the reference to the bottom of the screen doesn't do any good, so I got to say it. patreon.com/technoramapodcast. There you go. I'm going to get the Imperial Band on their way. Stop that. Stop. Good. And one more time, you can quickly glance down there again if you're thinking about it, or you've been listening to this thing for 15 years, like I was doing with CyberDuck, and I said, you know, it's probably time to register.
Oh, you used CyberDuck for that long and didn't pay for it?
Pretty much.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I got my value out of it. It was kind of an on-again, off-again thing.
I'd hate to see how you tip when you go to a restaurant.
Jeez. I tip very good, because right now the service people that are there are working their butts off because everybody's short on service. So, yeah. Yes, I am tipping very well. I know tipping isn't done in all countries and all things. It's kind of an American thing. But, all right, we have passed me the remote, right?
By the way, I saw,
there's the magic music. You were saying?
I just, I saw, was it one of the, I think it's been floating around on social media. It says, be careful, or be nice to our people because we're short-staffed. People said, hire taller people.
Oh, not funny.
Okay.
Yeah, we saw something similar too. It was like, don't get angry or don't get mad or something, because, you know, we're doing the best we can with.
Hey, unless somebody's blatantly bad, I mean, just doing it wrong, I'm not going
to
get mad.
Well, what and if I, you go in with your expectations too. I mean, we went to a restaurant when we were in Michigan, and from the time we walked into the door to the time we got our food, it was an hour. But you know what? We weren't in any hurry. It was a nice evening out with my parents. We had a nice conversation and, you know, got to talk about a lot of things. It was in an old movie theater that was renovated into a bistro. So we were having fun with the memories about what was the last movie you saw in here. None of us could remember because it's been like 45 years.
Right. But,
just go in with your expectations that this is going to take a little longer. And if you want fast food, go to the fast food place. But if you want a restaurant experience, it's going to take a little longer right now because they're a little short-staffed. We had a similar deal when we were in Wisconsin with we met with some friends at a sports bar. At 5:30 p.m., we were the only people there. There were about a dozen of us. There was one guy behind the bar serving drinks, getting the food, did a magnificent job. I think he knew everybody by name. And
was you get cheers?
Pretty much. And then as other people, you know, it was so nice because the music was a little loud. And I said, hey, Nick, you know, could you turn down the music a little bit? He did. I mean, it was very accommodating. And again, we tipped him very well because he was very good to us. Now, as it got to be 7:30 or so and we started clearing out of there, a few more people had shown up. There was a band out on the patio. I told them to turn it down too. But no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And then Metallica got all mad about it. Is that who it was? Yeah. Can you guys turn it down, please?
The Rolling Stones stomped off and off.
What do they say? If it's too loud, you're too old.
Yeah, that's it. That's pretty much it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand why, you know, a big empty restaurant with, you know, empty floors and the sound bounces off the walls anyway, and everybody, when it's full and everybody can barely hear anyway, you turn the music up louder. Like,
I know. Now it's always now aggravated the crap out of me.
Now I can't, you know, and you're leaning in and you're like 4 inches from somebody's face. Yeah, that's a real good way to stop germs from spreading, you know, just to hear what they're saying. So,
yeah, I don't understand why they turn the music up that loud, especially when there's a lot of people in it.
It's supposed to be like you said, ambient music. It's not supposed to dominate the place.
But yeah, if you wanted the loud music, go to, you know, you can go to a club at night.
Yes, we're old. Yes, we are old.
You can go to a discotheque and enjoy yourselves.
Anyone that donates $1 million to the show, Chuck and Craig will come out to your house and do an episode of Technorama Live.
On the lawn. We'll do it right on your lawn.
I'll sign up for that.
Yeah.
For $1 million, that'll pay for a couple of plane tickets at least.
Although for $1 million and plus shipping and handling. So, yeah, shipping and handling.
Patreon will be happy with us too because they get a cut.
Yeah.
Like, what? We just got like $10,000 in commissions. Yeah.
Everybody gets a cut. All right.
All right. Pass the remote. I got a couple for you this week. The I was watching a show on John DeLorean. Came up 3-part series called Myth and Mogul. John DeLorean went through, you know, his story about GM. It jumped around in the timeline a bit, but they were very effective in how they did this because they'd have a big date on the screen that said, you know, 1972, and they would go boom, boom. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. And it would move back the decades and years and go, okay, now we're talking about 1953. And then they jump forward. But it was very well put together. They did talk about it in a rough chronological thing. So, you know, the whole drug deal issue was at the end and his fall from...
Well, that was the end. That's
not really. He was still going in the year 2000. He was talking about making another DeLorean, two DeLorean cars. So
when did he die? I thought it was
2005 at the age of 80.
Really? I thought it was a lot.
I thought it was a lot sooner than that too.
Yeah. Later or whatever. You know what I mean?
But, and then there was another one called Framing DeLorean that I'm watching. It's about a 2-hour documentary and they have,
They're painting him.
Oh, was it Alec Baldwin was dressed up as him?
Yeah. He's kind of, breaking the fourth wall
he's modernizing some of the clips like the drug bust or when they were unveiling a car, so you could see it, and rather than in this jittery old black and white film you would see, you know, something more modern. He did a pretty convincing one. I mean, he had the nervous tics and twitches down, but I posted a picture on Jack Mangan's Deadpan group on Facebook of John DeLorean sitting at his desk with the DMC-12 car poster behind him. Mm-hmm. And I said, 40 years later, and people are still making a big fuss about the man DeLorean. Ba-doom-tsh. Disney Plus, watch the man DeLorean. And you get a story about John DeLorean.
Right.
And of course, they had a couple of clips in there about Back to the Future. So that was
and the child. And the little Grogu.
The child. His son was adopted. I didn't know that in the first, in the Myth and the Mogul episode. His son, Zach,
was the Mandalorians.
Like two. And then he and Christine Ferrari they had a daughter. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the second one I've got, I really did enjoy that show from a documentary standpoint. Because, you know, I remember he was a big car mogul and he got busted. He was making a car. And he got busted. But they went into the whole thing about what was going on in Belfast, the factory that they built there, how they shopped around. Mm-hmm. How he was kind of a shyster, always looking for a fast buck. But that's the impression I got out of it. I liked it. And the other one is season 2 of The Movies That Made Us. And of course, Netflix likes to put things in reverse order. So I watched season 2 first and then went back to season 1.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do that. It seems so whack job.
Well, it's because they show you... It says new episodes and they show you the, of course they know what you've seen. So they should start
you off. I think I know what I've seen. And I honestly don't remember seeing some of the ones that were on season 1, although they were marked as watched. Maybe somebody was watching on my account at one point, but I don't remember seeing some of these. So I went through and I watched both season 1 and season 2, very much enjoyed them. Of course, Back to the Future was on there as well.
I watched that one. Yep.
They had Jurassic Park, Pretty Woman, a lot of films. A lot of these are movies that almost didn't get made a number of times. You know, they were in the scrap box and somebody pulled it out and went, oh, this is interesting. Forrest Gump was one of those. Like, there's so many opportunities where they could have died on the vine, really, from the time it was written in a book or the original script. Except for, what was it, John Hughes's... Home Alone.
Yes.
That thing was like banged out in a weekend.
Yeah. The fact it's one of those movies that it's amazing that it got made.
Yeah. Or Die Hard was another one. Like, we have no idea what we're shooting and they get to the end and go, well, that was fun. Maybe it'll get some of its money back.
That was a fun Christmas movie being made.
So Yeah, the movies that made us, a lot of fun. It was mostly 80s movies, maybe early 90s movies. Dirty Dancing was in there also. So a lot of fun about the stories behind who was involved and what they did. And you know, in some cases, even a little emotional watching some of these stories and the people that passed away and whatnot.
So, oh, yeah.
What did you find?
Well, it's not a new movie or anything by any means, but it's called The Adjustment Bureau.
Is it about a dresser?
And, yes.
Where you put your socks in?
Not a bureau. A bureau. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know.
A department.
Anyway, so like it's called The Adjustment Bureau. It's from 2011. It's based on a book from Philip K. Dick. I think the short story's name was The Adjustment Team. So they changed it up a little bit.
Wait, and if they shortened that, they could have just shortened it up to the A Team.
Yeah, they could have. Yes, they could. So it starred Matt Damon and Emily Blunt. And I thought it was pretty good. It was kind of like, you know, Inception, where they're going through a door and it's a different view or something. They were kind of doing that a little bit. Matt Damon's character finds out that there's a whole other layer. There's a group of people that are keeping the time, things that are supposed to happen, happening. So there's not a supreme being, but there was a guy, or the chairman, that would make sure everything, he had everything written out, how it's supposed to happen. And the adjustments team was supposed to make sure things happened to his plan. Mm-hmm. And of course, Matt Damon and Emily Blunt, their characters keep meeting, yet they're not supposed to be meeting. They're supposed to not be together romantically, but they keep coming together and they're like, how is this happening? And that's where the story goes. So anyway, I enjoyed it. Was it on Peacock? I think it was.
You subscribed to Peacock?
I did. It was cheap.
How many subscriptions do you have now?
You don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't.
The reason I subscribed to Peacock was because of the Psych movie that came out last year. So I thought, well, I'll subscribe to it because it wasn't that expensive. So I paid for the year.
All righty.
And it has The Office and all the other stuff on there. So anyway, go check it out, The Adjustment Bureau.
If it's on Peacock, then it might be on Hulu soon.
You can probably find it anywhere.
Most of NBC stuff end up on Hulu anyway.
That is, yeah, it's because Peacock is the logo. That's there.
All right, let's take a look at the Geek Library. I believe it's this one. I still know how to push the right buttons most of the time.
Good.
Well, this is an interesting name that I'm going to try. G-I-J-S. I'm going to say Yeesh or Jeesh.
Jeesh Shulks.
Knew he could build a methane-powered motorcycle, but first he had to figure out where to get a giant balloon to store the gas. It's a funny thing, he said, in probably not that American accent. They're from a sex store. They're not condoms, but I found these images of naked women on these balloons laying around, and I thought, they're almost 200 liters, and they seem very strong. So that takes care of that.
I guess he's not getting the message that he should be getting from a balloon with naked women on it.
Was that on his bike?
That was his first idea. This thing can hold 200 liters.
It reminds me of what Scott Tyler and I were doing when we were building the robot Santa. Like, we don't know what we're looking for. We're just looking for shapes and sizes and colors and things. So, let's see. Shulks is an engineer and artist who built a methane-powered motorcycle that runs on gas harvested from local bogs in his native Netherlands. It's a strange and beautiful bit of inefficient engineering. 8 hours of harvesting time will let the motorcycle, called Slootmotor, Sloot means ditch in Dutch. That's just a great alliteration right there. It runs for 12 miles.
Right.
So our former CEO was a ditch man.
Yeah.
His name was Slootman. All right. The back of the retrofitted Honda motorcycle is a giant glass container filled with a condom-like balloon. Like most things about the bike's construction, the giant fetish balloon was used out of necessity. I used these balloons because they needed to be strong, Schalk said in a Zoom call with Motherboard. It just so happened that the sex store had the strongest balloons that would be great for storing gaseous fuel. Schalk's just graduated from a Dutch art institute with honors, and a methane-powered bike was his final project. As a poor student working his way through engineering school, then art school, the old Honda motorcycle appealed to him because he could repair it himself. It was cooler than the newer ones and cheaper, he said. Also, there's a kind of romance to a motorcycle. I have this very big desire to use this custom engine, he said. It brings you the independence and you get the movement, not that kind of movement, and you don't need anything except gasoline to power it. He didn't have much money, so he learned to work on the bike himself. It started 2 years ago when I took apart my own motorcycle and rebuilt the whole thing. I spent a lot of time, money, and effort rebuilding this 35-year-old motorcycle to be as good as new. As he worked on the bike, he stopped studying engineering and went to art school. It was there he got the idea for a methane-powered bike. Eventually, it became my graduation project because it took me so much time and research and effort to find out if it would actually work. So he worked on it. Obviously, it works. There's a video if you want to find those through the show notes. Go to episode 646 over at chuckchat.com. Sorry, a little early with the bell. / Technorama, episode 646. You can find that there. This kind of reminds me of my auto mechanics class in high school because I had my dad's old Chevy van, which needed just about everything worked on, which is fortunate because as we went through every unit, it's like, all right, Mr. Miller, this week we're talking about the transmission. Great, I got to do transmission work. This right. week we're going to be talking about brakes. Yep, I'm replacing the brakes too.
That's funny. Like,
he would teach it and I would put it to practical use that same week and I got an A in auto mechanics. Who knew?
Yeah.
Too bad you can't work on your own cars these days.
Not much.
I mean, you need some sophisticated diagnostic equipment in general. And I know that there's a lot of stuff you can work on. I got buddies that do off-road rally cars that are, my friend Steve pretty much built his rally car from scratch. He had a shell from one car and he had the parts from another and he built up a rally car and won some prizes. He's actually putting together a rally this fall in Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
Oh, so he's still doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So that, I believe, takes us to the end of the show notes. Our question of the week for you as we depart this week is, what was the first movie you ever saw in a movie theater?
I don't know. I was kind of young then.
I can tell you the first one I remember going seeing was a class field trip, and we went to go see Oliver. The Oliver Twist movie.
Okay.
Came out like, was it early 70s? We went to go see it. And I mean, that was kind of fun.
I think it may have been Jesus Christ Superstar. That was in the theater that we had the bistro in the other night.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You were talking about that. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that was it, which would have been 74.
I thought you were probably out seeing probably like the first run of the Maltese Falcon or something.
Wow. No. No.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of which, I think that came out in the 40s. I watched Sherlock Holmes and the Voice of Terror. Okay. Which was on the Roku channel. You know, Roku has their own channel with a lot of older movies or, you know, movies that are not on Netflix and stuff. Anyway, so I saw it and went, you know, I'm going to watch it. It was Basil Rathbone from 1942.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he's a good Sherlock. I like that. I enjoyed it.
I caught an old movie on the plane ride from Minneapolis to Phoenix last Sunday. It was The Treasure of the Sierra Madre with Humphrey Bogart.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Those old movies, they kind of moved slow.
They did. The pacing.
Oh my gosh, the
totally
pacing
different.
Was, yes, it was. It takes a long time for them to, you know, get to the mountain, and then, you know, a few things happen. The bandits try to rob them and whatnot. It's like they get to the end and not really feeling like there was a, you know, the lesson, I guess, was you can find the riches, because they found their gold and they spent about a year up there panning it out. And then, of course, they got robbed and Humphrey Bogart eventually loses his life near the end. And the old prospector dude and Bogart's partner go, well, you know, we started with nothing. We ended with nothing. So
we're out of here.
Yeah. So it was, it's like, I kind of got to the end of the plane ride and went, huh.
What did I just watch?
Yeah, I know what I just watched. I know it's a classic, but it was a different time for classic movies back then. But yeah, every once in a while, it's fun to pull out an old movie like that and watch it to not only compare to what we've got now, but, you know, check it off the bucket list and say, yeah, that was, hey, The African Queen is another one, another fun one to watch.
On an even smaller scale, go watch a trailer for a movie in the 70s as opposed to a modern trailer now.
Well, with the whole narration thing too.
Narration, newer ones have a lot of jump cuts and, you know, it's fast paced. You almost don't even know what the movie's about. And the older ones, it's like they pretty much narrate the whole movie.
Oh, there's trailers like that today.
Star
like,
Wars.
Okay. Pretty much. Oh, Star Wars.
It's like a boy and a girl and a galaxy. You know, I'm like, what?
You won't believe what you will see on the big screen this
That's
fall.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Don't feed the monsters after midnight. All right, that takes us to the end. What was the first movie you ever saw in a movie theater? We want to know, and we will put that on social media and get back to you next week with the answers that we get. So thank you very much, Craig. Oh, there's the music.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you. Thank you to our research department, our editorial department, the technical department, the broadcasting team. It takes a village to put this show together.
Yeah.
It's just
a
very small village.
Right.
The whole audio team, the video team, lighting, cameras. I feel like we should be rolling credits. That would be really funny.
Yeah.
It's just the same names keep coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
Audio production, Craig.
That's right.
It'd be more about here's the title, and then the name.
Now you're just making me feel exhausted listening to you talk about all the things I'm doing.
Well, thank you very much for all the hard work. Get in touch with us on the listener line, and till next time, tell a friend about Technorama. Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101, everybody. Good night.